This is Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and his guest by phone at 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC. Email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com or get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here's Eric.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And like I said, Bob is Bob Shorey. He's one of the MCSEs. It comes in, he helps us out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. And we got two lines open for you, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. So yeah, Danny had brought up Elon, how all the trouble he's having. He had some sort of interview with the New York Times that didn't go well. And now the Urban Dictionary is trolling him because of his famous tweet where he declared funding secured for his taking Tesla private at 420, which is also another little thing people are thinking has to do with marijuana. But he swears it doesn't. He just rounded up from 419. But now the Urban Dictionary is trolling him, saying basically the post says funding secured is something said when you have no idea where you're going to get the money. So poor Elon. You know, don't cry for him too much. He'll be fine.
Billions of dollars comes at a price.
Yeah, poor guy's working 120 hours trying to, squeeze out all these $35,000 Teslas that go for $60,000-$70,000 a pop with a $7,500 rebate from you and I and your friends and neighbors.
If you sell a $67,000 car for $35,000, your profit comes from government subsidies?
Well, the funny thing is, I guess UBS also posted a thing saying that if Elon does sell, which he's not going to, he's actually taking it off the table, a $35,000 electric vehicle, they'll lose $6,000 a vehicle. So because of this new powertrain they put in. So Elon didn't do the math. I mean, I think his heart's in the right place, that tweet there was against the short sellers. Tesla stock is one of the most shorted stocks on the market. Shorting means you're betting against it succeeding, and he doesn't like that. So he posted that tweet. The stock went up 11% and quote unquote hurt the short sellers. Now it's down a lot. He just made the short sellers $1 billion after his discussion with, I guess, the New York Times or wherever he just had this recent interview. He's having a rough day. But I digress. Let's get to your calls. He is the modern day Tony Stark without the weapons, but he is chucking stuff into space. So he's got some big rockets. He's got a flamethrower. You're right, Joey. He's got a big boring thing that actually drills holes in the earth, so he could be a mad scientist if he wants to be.
Well, the Tony Stark character was really patterned after Howard Hughes.
Oh, Stark was? Yeah.
Yes.
There's another guy.
So you know what happened to Howard Hughes.
I do. Yeah. Well, let's hope it doesn't happen to Mr. Musk. Let's go on to your calls. We're going to go to John, and we don't know where he's from. Hey, John, you there?
Yes.
What can we do for you, sir?
I've got a pop-up that keeps coming up on my computer, and it says that my disk cleanup for local disk D is almost full, and they want me to clean it out.
Yep.
But when I click on it and go to clean it out, it says there's 0 bytes on the two items. One is recycle, and the other one is DirectX.
This is a Windows 10 machine, correct, John?
Correct.
And it was updated recently, correct?
I believe so.
Yep. This is Microsoft not knowing its elbow from its D drive. And basically, this is we can't believe it. Every time Microsoft does these updates, what happens is it has to make the drive available. Basically, that little D drive is a segment of the system that is for recovery. And it's always low on space. By default, it's low on space. They formatted a little area that's small. And then, of course, the program does its update and forgets to rehide that drive. And now you get bothered for the rest of your natural life that your D drive is full, even though Microsoft knew it was. They set it up that way and then left things strewn about and forgot to turn it back off, turn that warning off. So it's a false warning. Now, we have ways of you fixing it that we posted on a past couple of shows. So if you go to our archive links, and we'll probably find it for our current links for you too, John, we'll show you how to hide the D drive so Microsoft stops bothering you about the thing they already knew about.
All right.
All right, John?
I will do that.
All right, so good luck.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye.
Good day.
You too. It's like, your car not knowing if it's got gas in it or not. It constantly says, I might be on empty. I might be on empty. I might be on empty. What are you going to do about it? I might be on empty. That's Microsoft for you. They don't even know. It's just ridiculous. Let's go on to Carl in Naugatuck. Hey, Carl, what's up? Hey, Carl, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Sure, what's up?
So we have a rather interesting situation. My wife and I have an HP running Windows 10, and Thursday night it installed a bunch of updates on her. Friday morning she went to check her computer, and it says anytime she enters her password, which is the same for everything.
The same for everything, Carl?
Yeah.
That's not a good idea, but we'll move on to that later. But go ahead.
Correct.
Oh, by the way, what is her password?
Yeah, we're not going to get
Oh, come on. I thought I might get you there. I tried to radio fish you.
I know you did. But the problem is when she enters her password, it says the username or password is not correct.
Okay.
And we don't know how to get around this issue.
All right, so this is Windows 10. What do you think there, Bob, on getting a password correction on Windows 10?
I don't know. If she got...
After an update.
Well, you should be able to enter your password in. You want to check your caps locks, of course.
Right.
And if you're using the... numbers key, you want to make sure that the little light's on so that the numbers are activated, because some people enter their letters on the keyboard and then go over to the number pad to do the numbers. So you got to make sure that those are on. But, you know, I don't believe that it would have changed the password. So
correct.
The password should be what it was.
And the username, what do you see for the username? Is it her name? Is it the right username? Or is it something different?
And
it
make sure that the caps lock is not on.
Yep, no caps lock is on. I'm going to check one other thing.
Mm-hmm.
You want caps
lock? Yeah, no caps lock is on. Every time we enter it, it says the username or password is incorrect.
And this is only after an update. So there are password hacks and password recovery tools, but I don't want to bring it up over the radio. If you truly think... Here's the thing that we deal with all the time. If people sometimes, literally, they forget the password, even though they've been entering it over and over and over again, they have kind of a brain fart. There's almost no way that Windows 10 would have changed it on her. So it's either she forgot her password, and you know it since it's the password for everything that she does, or you've got something corrupted that happened during the update. Now, can we get him into safe mode? Oh, go ahead, Bob.
Well, there's one other thing that's possible.
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, you know, you got to make sure that you're spelling it correctly, and you know, I know that's kind of obvious. But the other thing is that you may need, in order to log in, an internet connection, because under the early adoption of Windows 10,
mm-hmm.
they wanted you to create a Microsoft account that mm-hmm. was used to log in to your computer.
Right.
So you know, when we set them up, we set up a local account.
Right.
So if you're computer doesn't have an internet connection, it can't authenticate with the Microsoft account, and then it can't get in.
So you could have had an update where your network card is turned off, and now the update damaged or messed with the driver, and now you're not communicating with Microsoft, so they can't do the final connection.
Or if
is what you're thinking.
If it's a laptop and the Wi-Fi is not connecting, you know, if you can plug it into a wired network and get an IP, it might be able to get out, and you might be able to log in.
What do you think, Carl? Are we on the right track? What were you going to say?
I think you might be on the right track, because at the bottom of the screen, I'm noticing that there's three icons, but the one that has the internet connection has a giant X next to it.
Hey, that's why we get the big bucks here.
So sounds good. I'll try connecting it to a network, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, because we're going to assume she knows her password, whatever that password is, which is on everything she does. By the way, tell it to stop doing that.
Okay.
Because basically any of the services that she uses, let's say she uses LinkedIn, let's say she uses Facebook, let's say she uses any of these online services, if it's the same as her PC, these services get hacked all the time, right? And that information will be available in the dark web. So when they ever come across her name and email address, these guys in the third world have nothing to do but try them, right? And so there are plenty of people who use the same password for everything. They're really being silly. It's just that you're just asking to be hacked. So she needs to start changing her password and not adding a one after the password. That's not changing the password. It needs to be something completely different. Or you're leaving yourself to be wide open just by just hacks that have happened. Yahoo had a 2 billion email addresses hacked. So everyone who has got their password there is
you want
available.
A minimum of 8 characters, yeah. Upper and lower case, alpha, and then you want numbers.
Right.
And you want at least one or two symbols mixed in.
Yeah.
And that would be the uppercase top row.
Right. So.
All right, guys. I'll give that a shot and let you know how it turns out.
We appreciate it. Let us know. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, so nothing like a Windows 10 update to knock you off the internet. It downloads, doesn't know the D drive is their own problem, and then knocks you off the internet. Ah, Microsoft, we love you so. We're going to take a quick break, get back to more of your calls. You have three lines open. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC. I know you're all out there mowing your lawn before it rains. That's all I got to do. But if you need to ask a question, I'm here, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. We'll be right back. We are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. We're going to be here at 11 o'clock. We do have three lines open. I know it's one of those Saturday mornings, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. So feel free to get online. We'll do our best to help you out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. Let's go right to Bob in Deep River first. Morning, Bob. What's up?
Hey, well, I'll tell you. I got a Windows 7 Pro laptop Dell. I'm running an older HP inkjet printer. And no matter what I do, whether it's Excel, Word, or Quicken, or any kind of document, and I try to print it out, it always ends up on pause. You know, you can go to print devices and printers and see what's printing.
Yep.
It's always on pause, and I have to unclick the pause to print it out. It's always on pause. I've gone to the internet and looked to see if a lot of people have had this problem.
Sure.
And even people with brother printers have this problem. I was wondering if it's something to do with Windows or what. And I've downloaded the software, you know, cleared it out and downloaded software, the new software and everything. And I was just wondering if you have a cure for this.
Well, I'm trying to see if there's a default setting you've got set first. Obviously, you know how to unpause it, and then it goes ahead and prints, correct?
So when you unpause it, do you right click on it and find the thing that says use printer offline is checked?
No, it's not. It's online.
No, I understand, but there's a setting. If you right click on a printer, there's a setting on it that should not be checked that says use printer offline.
We're wondering if that might be your problem.
If that's checked, your printer is going to be paused. So then if you open up the see what's printing, so to speak, the queue, you can unpause it there, but the printer's still going to be paused.
Because you've told it that.
Because somehow it got paused. Yeah, exactly. Use printer offline. Does that make sense? So if you go into control panel and devices and printers and right click on that printer, there's a line that says use printer offline that should not be checked. If it's checked, then that could be your problem.
I just did. Oh, it says set as default printer. There's no reading about. There's no line saying using offline.
Okay. But what are the settings? It is set to be active, right? So.
Yes.
Is there a power saving going on here? Could it be one of those things where when you send the print job to it, the printer's kind of in a power saving mode and it hasn't woken up all the way?
Not that I know of. I thought I had taken that off of there. Right.
My thought is maybe you haven't. So what about trying to turn the printer physically on first, then turn your computer on, and then send a print job? All right? We're going to assume everything's awake.
Oh, it's just a sequence of events.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to see if you do it in that sequence, turn the printer on, turn the computer on, now the computer and the printer are both awake, and then send a print job. If that works, I think what's happening then would be that your printer is going into some sort of sleep mode, and the computer doesn't see it there, and that's why it's pausing the job until you say, no, I'm awake, and go ahead. Go ahead, Bob, another idea?
So, yeah, the setting that I was looking for, I kind of misspoke. So if you right-click on the computer and go about halfway down the list, it'll say printer properties.
Yes.
Not the one that says properties. Or actually, you want to get see what's printing. All right.
Yeah.
So if you open up the see what's printing and then you click on the printer menu, you'll see about two-thirds of the way down, it'll say use printer offline. And you want to make sure that that's not checked.
Okay. It's not checked.
Okay.
Then it might be, I think it might be power saving. So do a test there, Bob, with my thoughts as far as powering it up fresh, then bringing up the machine, then doing a print. If that works, then I think your printer is going into some sort of
sleep mode.
And your computer is saying, hey, I'm going to pause this until the darn thing wakes up. And when you manually wake it up, you're sending a signal that it's up. I think that could be the problem. Try updating the printer driver as well. If you can go out to the manufacturer site and update the printer driver, that could help as well.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
All right,
I'll
Bob.
I'll try those. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome, sir.
You guys got a good show.
Thank you. Thanks for listening.
Very good. Very good. I listen to it all the time.
We're happy you do.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Bob. All right. Let's go on to Ron in West Hartford. Hey, Ron.
Hey, good morning, Eric. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing just fine. So I read in the Wall Street Journal this week there was a review of an app called Dashlane, which is a password manager and password generator, and it syncs across multiple devices, and it can even put you onto a VPN in case you're on insecure Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
And just calling to get your take on third-party password managers and your experience with them has been.
My experience is I stay away from them only because of password managers that have had issues with being hacked themselves.
Exactly, yeah.
And so passwords, in my opinion, they're a problem, right? Having just one-step verification of just your password is fine, but you need that second step. So we were talking earlier about a physical key that you can purchase so that, yeah, you can have your password and manage it, and that's fine. So if this thing gets hacked, you don't care, because if you have the Yubico key within your proximity, you know, on you or connected to your computer, that second step really makes it safer for you to be able to log in. Then you could use any password manager you want, and understanding that you're safe because that second step is requiring a physical device on your person.
So I'm sorry, I missed that part of the show. So just tell me again what the key is and how you use it.
So basically it's a physical key you could have on your keychain that you would plug into your computer. So when you logged in and your password...
A USB key.
Yeah, USB key, right. And you're logging into whatever site you want to log into when your password manager is dealing with the password piece of it, the USB key has to be physically present on your computer to do the second step. So that you don't have to worry so much about password managers being hacked, because even if they are, without the second portion of this to work, you're safe. Everything you own is safe because you've connected it to the fact that you don't allow anything to happen without this key present.
But if I'm on the phone and I'm trying to do some banking on the phone, and
they have that as well.
Does the key work on the phone?
Yes, sir. They have. So that's why I said it'd be on your keychain. You have a near field communication style key or a USB Bluetooth key that will talk to your phone and say, "Okay, John's put his password in." Ron's put his password in. Oh, and I see the key. So he must be the guy. And then it'll let you in.
There's a YubiKey NEO or Neo,
right,
for $50 on their site.
So I would strongly have you look at those types of technologies. Your password manager, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I like to write them down. But you can now feel a little safer by having a second factor. If you put that factor in place, you can use pretty much any password manager, as far as I'm concerned.
Got it. All right. That's what I needed to hear.
All right, Ron.
Okay. Appreciate it very much, guys.
Yep. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Because passwords are a mess. They're just an utter mess. I mean, the last two callers ago, his wife's using the same password for everything. One hack, and somebody's got access to everything she does.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Why am I doing the traffic, Joey? Joey thinks it's a regular morning show. He's a little rusty. He hasn't done our show in a long time. He figures it's Tuesday or something like that. Oh, there we go. There's the music we're used to. Yeah, he's got a whole computer problem over there he's fighting with. So we're going to be here until 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. Two lines open for you, 1-800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. So John and Lori, hang on. Everything we've talked about today has been posted live by Mike G over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com, thenameoftheshow.com, which also works. And if you go to our Facebook page and you actually like Tab Computer Systems on Facebook, the stuff will get into your news feed if Mr. Zuckerberg deems it worthy. Because now it's getting harder and harder to be deemed worthy. And who knows what is going to go to your news feed. And if you like us on Twitter as well, it'll get there as well at Tab Computer Sys. And we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab, a little spirit of the radio. Perfect song for radio. Feel free to get online. We've got a couple lines open for you, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Bob had found this article. I want to bring this up. It's a CNET article, and it's kind of interesting. Facebook is taking heat from HUD, allegedly over discriminatory housing ads. So the thing about any kind of media that you use on the internet these days as far as advertising is you can do something called geofencing, I think is what it's called, and you can pick and choose exactly where you want that ad to go. You can pick and you can pick this down to the street if you want to have certain folks, individual people, see the ad. You can do it based on all sorts of demographics that you can select within these types of advertisements. And HUD is saying, look, you're being, you know, if you're you want to, you know, advertise an apartment for sale, you could discriminate against folks using Facebook's tools, advertising tools. And HUD's exactly right. I mean, that's one of the reasons that, that this is so successful is that you can be more selective with who you want to see the ads that are out there, whether it be from Facebook or any other internet-based technologies. Because you, with the cookies and all the information they know about you, they know literally more about you than you know about yourself. And, you know, if you did a search on Calico cats, I mean, they can send an email to you for Calico cat food or whatever it might be that you're looking at, along with you're reading an article, and then boom, a Calico cat food comes up in your on your Business Insider news that your feed you're reading. So Facebook's getting heat from HUD. Now, the weird thing about this is before the internets, and Al Gore invented it, before he invented the internets, I was delivering newspapers, right? I was delivering newspapers, six newspapers, Hartford Current. But I was only delivering those newspapers to people who paid for the newspaper. And nobody seemed to have any problem with the fact that the ads for HUD in the newspaper were not going to everybody. They were only going to the people who paid me. I don't know if that is, means anything or not, but I've always thought about it that way. News was expensive when I was a kid. I had to go out, get the newspapers and deliver them and get my 60 cents or whatever it might have been to deliver the news to people. So they were not seeing the, if you didn't pay for the paper, you weren't seeing the ad, period. I'd never seem to have a problem with that. Same thing with advertising on television and stuff. It's expensive, right? It's extremely expensive. So same thing happens in any other advertising method. Facebook allows you to be even more discriminatory as far as where you get the ad and which eyeballs go to see the ad. And now HUD's upset, but I don't know. I agree with HUD that it is discriminatory, but what you going to do about it is the key here. It's Mr. Zuckerberg. We'll see what happens, but it's the nature of the whole technology. It's what you're paying for. You don't want to waste money sending out the ad to everybody. You can be more selective. I think they charge you by the eyeball. Let's go on to John in Enfield. Hey, John. Hey, John, you there?
Yep.
What's up?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm running an iMac desktop, 2011 I bought years and years ago, obviously, and it's starting to slow down on me. And primarily I do just, you know, things like email, internet. I have a few Excel spreadsheets I run, but I would say the one thing that requires, some memory is I use Lightroom quite a bit, and I'm working with raw images.
Yep.
I don't do much with video, so I'm looking at getting a new machine. And they have the option of solid
state, excuse me, straight through versus that Fusion Drive.
Mm-hmm. And I'm a little hybrid.
I'm a little leery of that. I just want to know if you have an opinion on that. And then finally, I guess there's been some rumors that they're going to come out with a new 28 configuration. I don't know if you guys have heard anything on that. That's the question, is Fusion versus solid state straight through.
Well, if you can afford solid state straight through, that's the direction we're always going to recommend. You get the best performance, but you'll have a smaller drive generally because they're expensive. And especially with anything with the word Apple next to it, you're going to get a teeny weeny drive that's ridiculously expensive, even though it's going to be a drive that I could put in my Intel machines for a lot less. So if you have the money and you need the performance, solid state, but you're going to have a very small partition.
Okay.
So keep that in mind.
If you went that way, then you could probably just keep everything on a backup drive or something, all the data, correct?
You could, right. You can get an external drive attached to the machine you're going to get. But the hybrid drives are nice, too. We build a lot of machines with hybrid drives, so your boot up times are really fast, and you get some of the benefits of a solid state without the cost. So you get larger hard drives. So it really comes down to how much space you need and the cost. And when you're talking Apple, it's going to be a lot more expensive than if you looked at a PC for the same technology. But you're an Apple guy, so you're already in the Apple ecosphere, right? You already understand.
Oh, yeah. I've got iPhones everywhere, iPads everywhere, so I'm kind of stuck.
No problem. I'm not going to try to change your mind there. So it's just down to your price point, what you can afford, and how much space. So, 128 is probably the smallest you're going to look at there, but I would try to get 256 if you can, or even 512 for the SSD.
Okay.
Most computers these days are going to have 1 or 2 terabytes of storage for traditional drives.
Whatever I get is going to be much. I mean, I'm running a platter right now on a 2011 configuration.
Yeah, so old stuff.
It's all going to be faster.
Lightning speed faster. Even if you get a hybrid drive, it'll be lightning faster than what you're doing now.
Right. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, John. Good luck.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye bye. Solid state's the way to go, though, if you can afford it. It's going to Tech in Manchester. Hey, Tech, what's up?
Jack.
Yes. Hi.
Hi. I have a spam problem.
Okay.
What happened is I am getting emails from, it appears from people that I know. However, they have changed the spelling of the person's name.
Yep.
And also the sender's address changes every single time. So
yep.
I can block them.
Yes.
But I only block that one and the new one comes up. I'm getting like 3 or 4 a day.
Spear phishing.
It is spear phishing. It's a problem. It's basically nothing. There's not a whole lot you can do other than go into your email provider's spam settings. So who is giving you your email? Who's your email provider?
Cox.
Okay. It's funny because I have the same problem on my Cox account. I haven't bothered to go and fix it. It's only on one person doing this to me, but it is annoying. I get 3 or 4 of them a day from somebody I know with the spellings all changed of their name. It's really bizarre.
It is.
And I haven't bothered to do this myself because I just delete the messages and nobody in my house is going to click on them.
I delete them also, but it's just like every morning I go through and it's like bing, 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 bing. I got 3 or 4 of them.
Yeah.
And now it's more than one person. It's 3, maybe 4 people now.
I would contend somebody in that person's mailbox might have been impacted.
How about mine?
No, you're the recipient. Most likely it's them, the person's name. And I've called the person and is doing it. That's happening to me with their name, and I had them look at it. But I got a feeling it's somebody's got their address book.
Right.
So if you go to Cox's spam settings, you log into your Cox account, you can increase your spam settings to be more forceful, and it might clamp down on these emails by just increasing the spam settings so that you get less spam.
It seems like they never get tired,
No, I know.
I delete them, man. The thing must be just automatic in a computer somewhere.
Correct. It seems very automated. All the messages inside them are all a little different.
Yep.
it's pretty amazing all the time and effort that was put into it, but it is silly because it's such a weird. I mean, some of the spellings of the person's names are just baffling, right?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay.
So
I'll try that with Cox.
That's all you can really do. There's nothing else you can do, Tech, besides that. There's no control. You can't stop the mailman from delivering the junk mail other than through your spam settings.
Yep. Okie doke.
All right.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
Our pleasure.
Appreciate your program.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Have you got any of those, Bob?
Well, I get them all the time.
Well, like he described the same way where it's like a guy's name is, let's say, Bill Smith, and then you get an email from Will Smoth, and then you get an email from Zill Smooth. I mean,
no, I don't get too many of those.
Okay.
I mean, most of them get filtered.
Yeah.
You know, and I do go through my spam looking for false positives every day, but,
yeah,
you know.
All right. Yeah. It's really all you can do is increase your spam settings. I'm going to take another call then, Joey, okay? All right. He's cool with it. We're going to go to Lon in Newington. Hey, Lon.
Oh, hi, guys. I have a question. My computer has a solid state drive. My guy haven't failed yet, but if it failed, how can I retrieve my data from that drive? I know the regular drive, there's company that do it. Well, those solid state ones, is there a way to get to it?
Yeah, same way. Those companies will try to get the data back for you, like Kroll OnTrack. We've talked about them before. You can get data recovery from them. But the best way to get your data back is to back it up first.
Yeah, I do that.
All right, good. But you can.
It. Thank you, guys.
You got it, Lon. Yeah, you can get your data back from these data recovery. It's pretty much like an SD card, a big monster SD card. These guys can plug it in and try to recover it depending on how it fails. So it can be done. We're going to step out for a quick break. We got a bunch of lines open for you on this Saturday morning. Dr. Alessi will be in after the show giving you a second opinion on your health advice. So stick around for Healthy Rounds. This is Computer Talk. We'll be right back. And we are back. This is Computer Talk. We're here until 11 o'clock. And lines are wide open, guys, if you want to get a call in here. Usually the lines are all jammed up, but I do think you're all mowing your lawns before it rains, just like I have to do after the show. 1-800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. So we got some news for
you. That makes three of us.
Yeah, you too. So what do you got, Bob? You wanted to bring up some news as we wait for some calls.
Yeah, okay. Now we're coming into the election. We just finished the primaries,
yes.
But we're coming into election season in a few months.
So much fun.
Yeah.
Wee.
And so I got another CNET article. 36 states are using hacking detection sensor to protect the midterm elections.
All right.
So they're going to use this thing that's going to prevent me from hacking.
Hacking and coughing. Gotcha.
There you go. So anyway.
That was bad. Everyone's groaning out there.
Well, I have this book, Dad Jokes. There's 100 dad jokes. My wife made me read it while we were on our weekend trip.
Wow. Your jokes are that bad that she gave you another bad book about bad jokes?
Well, it came from one of my son's wife or girlfriend. And
wow.
Yeah, I had to read it. I was obligated.
All right. So what is this?
See, we're talking about our kids.
Yeah, I know we are. Well, sorry. I had to figure out where that came from. But go ahead.
Anyway, these things are called Albert sensors.
Okay.
They can detect hacking attempts and alert the government agencies quickly. So the U.S. Is beefing up voter system security in preparation for the 2018 elections. Most U.S. states have employed Albert sensors, a technology that could detect hacking attempts and send alerts to federal and state government agencies, Reuters reported.
Mm-hmm.
This comes after Russian hackers reportedly breached voter registration databases in Illinois and Arizona. These databases are critical when it comes to verifying a voter's identity.
Well, they probably went in there and deleted all the dead people.
When he or she casts the vote at polling station. That's not happening. Well, in Illinois, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
There's an old saying in Illinois, may you vote every year and often as many times as possible for the rest of your life and many years thereafter.
There you go. So anyway, actually make sure that the voter registry, the voter registry database is
clean. In Illinois, they got nailed so many times for so many people voted who had passed away many, many years.
Yeah.
And they voted every year.
That was before the Russians. All right. Yeah. So they're going to have Albert now know if the Russians are going to go in there and delete people off the rolls. That's right. The concern.
Sure. Well, as of August 7th, 36 states had installed Albert sensors in their election systems, according to Reuters.
Yeah.
The sensors are designed after a system that is used to guard federal government networks,
all
Bloomberg
right.
reported.
Okay.
They reportedly can't block cyber attacks, but they can send suspicious information to a federal and state information sharing center near Albany, New York.
Mm-hmm.
Government agents can then reportedly attempt identifying if it's actually a hacking attempt and notify the states more quickly.
And then those guys are going to say, what do we know about IT?
Jeanette Menfra, a top cybersecurity official at the Department of Homeland Security, also sat down with CNET earlier in February to discuss the different ways hackers can interfere with the midterm elections.
Mm.
Pretty much anything is going to have some vulnerability that somebody is going to try to exploit, Manfred said during the interview.
Mm-hmm.
The Department of Homeland Security didn't immediately respond to a request for comment.
Yeah. Now, again, what we do here in the state of Connecticut is we have a paper ballot. So when you put the thing through, it gets counted electronically, and then the paper itself goes to a bin, and then it's found sometime, somewhere in Bridgeport when they need extra votes. But the point is, it's a paper it's a paper ballot, so they can actually corroborate the votes with the electronic number, right? It's a scanner. So the key is, though, if you walk up to the voting place and they say, oh, you're not on the list, I think even in Connecticut, though, you can still cast a provisional ballot. So even if they took you off the list, you could, I think, I'm not the Secretary of State, but I'm pretty sure you can still cast a vote. And you can actually register right there, I think. In some cases, you can register same day. So if you had to go and register, you could do that too.
Yeah, you could. My understanding was you could register same day, but you couldn't change party affiliation the same day.
Yeah. So interesting they're going to put these Albert sensors. Are these things made in China? No, I'm just kidding.
no, just the chips that...
Andrew, we'll put a link up to the Albert sensors. You can read about it. And they're trying to protect us from the Russians. Thank you so much. Let's go on to Stacy in Middletown next. Hey, Stace, what's up?
I am having cell phone coverage. I'm wondering if you might be able to give me some guidance. My husband says it's my phone, which is an Apple 6, but...
Oh, okay. You have it. So what do you have for a cell phone service? Are you on it now?
I'm sorry.
Are you on your cell phone now, Stacy?
Yes.
I agree. It stinks. That stinks. I don't move.
Okay.
Who's your carrier?
Yeah, it is. Maybe it is my phone.
Yeah, who's your carrier, Stacy? Who's the carrier?
We have Verizon, and then in the house, we have Frontier.
Okay, so you have internet in the house. You broke up, of course. You said that.
This could be my phone.
It could be your phone. Does your husband have a Verizon on his phone, too?
He's a Samsung, and he doesn't break up.
Through Verizon, though, right?
We both have Verizon.
Okay, the newer versions of operating system of Android can allow you to do Wi-Fi connections. So if you've got a good Wi-Fi signal in your home, you can make Wi-Fi connected calls. So you're probably running an old version of Apple, which is an Apple 6, and you're not able to make Wi-Fi calls, I don't think, with an Apple 6. Right, Bob?
Well, I have an Apple 6S.
Can you do Wi-Fi calls?
No, but
right.
But I'm not having that problem.
Well, she could be in a bad spot.
Well, she could be in a bad spot. The other question is, how long has it been since she rebooted her phone?
Oh, I do it every... I get so frustrated, I may do it every week.
Wow.
When it gets particularly bad. So,
and have you done the latest update, firmware update? Or do you just keep saying no later?
No, I will do the update.
Okay. So when we used to have Verizon 2 in our house in Southington, and I'd have to step on my tippy toes to send a text because we had bad service in Verizon where we were at our home. I switched over to Google Project Fi. Check it out.
Okay.
If you're in the market for a new phone, check out Google Project Fi. It's going to leverage three different cell services. It uses Wi-Fi calling, and my cell phone bill is $22 a month, including data. Yeah, I swear. I'm not kidding. And if you turn the data protections on and don't let your data run out of your phone, you'll find that you'll save a ton of money. And your husband obviously is an Android fan, so check it out, Google Project Fi. But I agree your phone has a problem because you're cutting in and out.
Yeah. Okay. So here's my big thing about Google is that I'm paranoid about them. I hate them.
I hear you.
And
I can't quell your fears. The Googleplex is always listening.
I tell me about it.
At least Apple does a better job with privacy. I agree with that.
Yeah.
So far. Until they don't.
They tell us we did.
Until they don't. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
All right,
Stace. Look into it.
You got it. Good luck.
Thanks.
Yeah, bye-bye. The thing about cell phone service is if you can get it through your Wi-Fi, if you can do cell phone calls through your Wi-Fi, you don't have to worry about coverage anymore. I want to thank you guys for joining me on this lovely Saturday morning. Thank you, Joey Burgoyne, for being in our production area. Man, that's awesome. It's nice to see him. Thank you, Mike G, for posting everything live. Dr. Alessi's up next.
See you next week.